You're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network. Ha cha 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 cha.
Hey, you're listening to Tooncast.
Indeed I am, Michael. And I am here to help you and Kevin take over podcasting. Your brain here. I like listening to Tooncast while trying to take over the world.
I go, 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 while listening to Tooncast.
Chief Quimby here, and your assignment is to listen to Tooncast.
Hello and welcome to the 50th episode of Tooncast, brought to you by the GeekCast Radio Network. I am your host, Dave, Joe, and Mike, and today I'm joined once again with Professor Vos K. Dog Thompson. Kevin, hello.
Hello.
Hello. And today we are going to be talking about the classic cartoon, Don Adams voiced cartoon, Inspector Gadget.
Yay!
So what have you been up to, sir?
Good Lord, it has been a crazy, busy last 7 to 10 days, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It just seems like stuff's been happening, like, everything's been, I don't know, like, the wheels have hit the pavement and the car is flying away. And, you know, let's start with BehindTheVoiceActors.com, obviously my stuff over there. Seems like it's been taken off big time. We have a bunch of actual voice actors who have either joined our forums or have befriended us on Facebook, have left messages on Facebook. Maurice LaMarche, Bill Ratner, the voice of Flint from G.I. Joe, and then the latest person that started leaving us all kinds of messages on Facebook was Sean Schemmel.
So that's awesome.
Yeah, he left us like 4 or 5 messages on Facebook, and, you know, he had said, one of them was saying something like he's seen a lot of voice acting websites, but most of them are lame, and he really liked this one, so, you know, that's kind of cool. I've been adding all kinds of stuff over there. I went through the entire original G.I. Joe cartoon and got every single character up there. I did both the 80s Garfield and the current Garfield show and added those. I've just been adding tons of stuff, including some special stuff to kind of go along with our show today on Inspector Gadget, which is some voice compares of the 4 main characters in Inspector Gadget. So I had all that going on, and of course, like you know, we've had all kinds of craziness happening surrounding our last interview.
Oh my God, I thought we were going to get put in front of a firing squad or something. Holy crap. You know, honestly, you know, seriously, I know this is our general chat thing. I was thinking of us doing this before the actual show, before we started the whole episode 50 here, but we might as well just do it here. When we interviewed Maurice LaMarche and Kevin asked him that, I think you asked him the question. I don't think I asked him that question about the voice acting, which did you prefer? And then he proceeded to tell us about doing Mr. Freeze in Arkham Asylum 2. Now, neither of us realized.
First of all, you gotta remember, for those listening, that when you're doing an interview with at least in my experience, when you're doing an interview with one of these guys, especially someone like Maurice LaMarche, a lot of it's hard to take in as you're doing it because you're so concentrated on, you know, not cutting him off, you know, who's asking the next question, what you're asking, how you're going to word it, and doing all this stuff, that a lot of it you can't take in as you're doing it.
Mm.
You know, for me, so half the stuff that he was answering, it wasn't absorbing into me until I listened back to the interview a second time. So I just wanted to throw that out there. But you can keep going.
Oh yeah, but you know, when he answered, you know, he said he had just rapped on Mr. Freeze for Arkham Asylum 2, and I was like, "What? Can you give us a sample of the voice?" And he goes, "You know, contractually, I just don't think I can, and you know, whatever else." Now, you know, I want to put it out there, and I put it out there before. Stephen Phillips and I recorded a Geekcast Radio update, which will hopefully be out before this episode, basically saying this exact same thing, except it was with me and Steve instead of me and Kevin. You know, Mr. LaMarche, when we were done with the interview, before we hung up with him, he did not ask us to remove that. Not when we were on the call with him. And now, if I had had plenty of time, you know, if he had said something beforehand or whatever else before we published the thing, sure, I would have edited that part out. But it's like the next day, it was everywhere. It went viral.
Yeah, it did go viral, and it was interesting checking different Facebook posts and stuff like that, because at first, you know, we're like, okay, we posted the interview, and obviously since I have a lot to do with Behind the Voice Actors, we posted it on our site, but that's no big deal. I mean, we posted it on the main page. It's kind of a spotlight thing. That's not a big deal. Then the next time I check, it's posted on some lesser-known, not that they're not well-known amongst the geek community, but lesser-known on the geek community website. Then the next time you check, it's on a little bit more popular website. Then the next time you check, all of a sudden it's been posted on IGN, and then it's just gone crazy. Like, you did a Google search for it, and you come up with a dozen to two dozen websites that it's on. And it just seemed like as the hours went by, whatever day that was, a couple of days ago, which would be, you know, a while ago, probably by the time this was posted, but
yeah,
as the hours went by,
yeah,
it was just crazy.
Yeah, you know, when you texted me to, you know, you said something about, you know, well, apparently you haven't read his Facebook or whatever else. Now, I never got an email from Maurice. Now, if he would have sent me an email, and I think what he said in one of his Facebook status replies was that he was going to email me, but by the time he had entered his name into a Google search, it was already out there.
Yeah.
There was some other fan or friend of his or whatever that made a comment about, you know, you'd think that they would respect your wishes. Some people are just jerks or something. We would have fully respected Mr. LaMarche's wishes if he, at the time of the interview, if he had made them known to us. You know, I edit these things. Once we record the interviews, I edit them as soon as we're done. I put them all together within a matter, say we finish an interview at 8 p.m., by 2 a.m., it's fully edited, ready to be posted whenever the date that we're going to post it as. As soon as I have a final product, whatever's in there, that's what's in there. And I don't mean to say that to be a dick. I'm not at all, but that's just the process that I use.
And I think, you know, it's and for those that don't know, what we're referencing to, basically, we didn't realize that was going to be breaking news until all of a sudden all these websites started posting
it. Broke.
And I had an initial thought when I saw these posting on some of these websites. I'm like, ooh, I'm like, I hope he's not going to get any backlash from this, because, you know, maybe he didn't realize what he said, or maybe he didn't realize that,
right,
you know, this was out there, people were listening to our podcast or whatever.
Right.
And basically when I started seeing this, I was like, ooh, he might get in trouble. Then I checked his Facebook page, and he had, you know, basically said, you know, that he, for the record, he's done everything he could, but, you know, he's, and to clear the air for everybody, he's not upset at us.
No, exactly, he's not. You know, you apologized to him, I apologized to him. After I posted my comment back to him on his Facebook page about apologizing, I'm not going to open the email, but I have the Facebook notification email saying, you know, gents, it's on me. There's nothing you could do about it. You know, as far as I know, it's not causing any issues. Again, to Warner Brothers, I'm very sorry. And we're very sorry, too. I mean, you know, we just thought it was going to be one of those things where, oh, Maurice LaMarche is playing Mr. Freeze in Arkham Asylum 2.
Right. And like you said, it created a buzz, so it can't be bad. And at the same time, you know, he said he wasn't meaning anything. He was just trying to answer a question and have somewhat of an interesting answer. And to his credit, he didn't do the voice. He, you know, he knew that there was a line there that he couldn't cross.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't think anything bad is, if anything, created more buzz and hype for the game.
Oh, exactly, yeah. What else, I
wanted to bring it up was just, you know, for those posters out there that were thinking that we were being dicks or that we're being mean, there's nothing like that. He's not upset at us. We didn't really do anything wrong. Once we realized what was happening, it was beyond our control. There was nothing we could have done to stop it.
Yeah, exactly.
We could have taken that part out of the interview and reposted it, but it had been out already for too long, and too many websites had a hold of it. There was no way we could, like,
well, you know, the funny thing is, Steve mentioned it in the GCRN update that we did that was posted before this episode will go up. The Maurice LaMarche interview at that time was the most downloaded off the website, off of geekcastradio.com. It had over 1,000 downloads.
Wow. And
yeah, and I'm not saying that. I want it made clear. I'm not just saying that because I'm a part. I mean, that's Steve and I's website. That's the geek. You know, that's our network's website. I'm not saying that because I want to get the popularity for the site and the network out there. I'm just saying that because I am fucking shocked.
Yeah.
At that number.
And if you think about it, even if there was a way for us to somehow get that off, even if the video was no longer out there for people to hear, people knew, so there was nothing you could do about it. It would have been posted that, yes, it was on an, you know, people would have been just saying, well, it was on a video, the video's not available anymore, but that doesn't change the fact that he is voicing this person, blah, blah, blah. So
yeah.
Even if you put the video out, we couldn't stop the word of mouth. Or the word of net, or the word of however you want to call it.
yeah.
It's been a crazy week.
Yeah, it's been a hell of a week. For me, you know, I've just been doing the usual podcasting thing. We've got a backlog over at ToyCast, so I'm not really focusing on ToyCast right now. Focusing more on Beast Unleashed. Steve and I just interviewed Ian Corlett, who voiced Dr. Wily in Captain N, the Game Master. He's mainly known for Cheetor from Beast Wars and Beast Machines. But I didn't know if you ever watch ABC Family. I don't know if you ever watched that show. Or not that show, but that network. He is the announcer for them.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew that.
He was actually on my list back when I was doing my top 10 voice actors, which three of those lists have been posted at Behind the Voice Actors, three of my top 10 lists that I still have to finish doing the write-up for three of them. But he was actually in the consideration for, I believe, I can't remember now if it was the 80s or 90s male voice actors. He didn't make the top 10, but he was in the run because he actually did quite a few things in the, I want to say, late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
I think he was also involved in Gummy Bears, possibly, and a couple other things.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we are going to move on to the history lesson, and unfortunately, because somebody's printer broke and his other computer doesn't work, Kevin doesn't have a friggin' script this week.
I'm off the charts here.
Exactly. So, Inspector Gadget is an animated television series developed in a joint venture between France and Canada and the United States about a clumsy, simple-witted detective named Inspector Gadget, who is a human being with various bionic gadgets built into his body. Gadget's arch-nemesis is Dr. Claw, the leader of an evil organization known as MAD. This was the first syndicated cartoon show from Deke Entertainment, as well as the first from the company to be created specifically for American viewers, along with the Littles and Heathcliff and the Cadillac Cats. It originally ran from 1983 to 1986 and remained in syndication into the late 1990s. The series was a co-production between Deke Entertainment, now Cookie Jar Entertainment. Ooh, Deke changed their name. Wow.
Yeah.
In French.
Actually, if you look at some of the DVDs that come out nowadays, they'll have the little cookie jar logo at the bottom.
Mm. As far as seven and Nelvana in Canada, the animation work was outsourced to foreign studios such as Tokyo Movie, Shinsha in Japan, and Cuckoo's Nest Studio in Taiwan. In 1999, it was adapted into a live-action Disney film starring Matthew Broderick as the title character and Rupert Everett as Dr. Claw. So, general memories on Gadget.
I remember this show a lot. This was one of them. I mean, this basically ran from one of the times when I was... I mean, this was my entire childhood, actually, I should say, because, you know, you had your preschoolish cartoons, like I've talked about numerous times on the show, like Smurfs and Care Bears, etc. But starting in 83 and basically going for the rest of the 80s, I mean, not a lot of shows did that. And so it basically spanned almost my entire childhood where it was actually on TV. And, you know, I remember it a lot. I watched the shows quite a bit. Unlike a lot of shows that we've talked about in the past, if you would have talked about, or that we talked about recently, I guess, if you would have mentioned Inspector Gadget and, you know, asked me what I remembered from it, I could have told you all the main characters. I could have told you some of the minor characters. Mm-hmm. I could have, you know, talked about the... some of the different gadgets. I could have talked about some of the different quotes and catchphrases. I mean, a lot of this sticks with me. It wasn't necessarily my favorite cartoon when I was growing up, but I just must have watched enough of it where enough of it stuck with me. And, you know, I have fond memories of this show. I wouldn't say that it was even in my top 10 favorite cartoons of the 80s. It might be one of the top 10 best cartoons of the 80s in retrospect, though. And there's a lot of good things about this show.
Oh, yeah. For me, I remember watching it, but I remember only catching it in bits. I never really... I want to make it clear. I love this show, don't get me wrong, but as a kid, in 83, 84, it was He-Man and Transformers for me. And Voltron. But... you know, I remember catching episode here, episode there, and I really, really enjoyed it. I didn't know then, but Agent 86, Get Smart, was Inspector Gadget. And he should be, I know you guys over at Behind the Voice Actors do voice compares. I don't care. Outside of Don Adams and Maurice LaMarche, those should be the only two compares you have.
I think the thing about... and I mean, this is kind of going right into voice casting and actor or characters, but I think the thing that's interesting though about this is going into the other people that did his voice, because it was only one time shots, basically, you're hearing stuff that sounds so, when you hear it the first time, it sounds so bizarre and so ridiculous at first that it makes it almost more interesting. That being said, I won't talk about the other ones quite yet, but talking about, you brought up Don Adams and Maurice LaMarche, I actually have a hard time deciding which one I like better. And that sounds weird because Don Adams basically is Inspector Gadget, and like that's one of the things that made the show successful. But, and I'm not just saying this just because we just interviewed Maurice LaMarche, because there's other characters where I like other people's takes better on it, but... I really like Maurice LaMarche's take on Inspector Gadget, and that was a kind of probably a daunting task trying to take over from Don Adams.
Well, the thing about the LaMarche Inspector Gadget voice is that, I mean, Maurice even said it in the interview we did. He is an imitator. He is a mimic. So he pretty much mimicked Don Adams' voice. So it's like I couldn't, like when I played the two clips together, I almost couldn't tell a difference.
Right.
Between Adams and LaMarche. But because I remember Don Adams doing it the most,
mm-hmm.
or originally, that's who I liked the best.
Gotcha, yeah. And maybe we can move in just so people aren't aware. Inspector Gadget basically did some things that make it very unique as far as the voice cast goes, that you don't see from a lot of other cartoons. You might find it in a couple other cartoons, but you don't see it in a lot, where they have multiple versions of the pilot episode, and they actually have three versions of the very first episode. And that's where we're getting a lot of these different voice actors, because for all of the cartoon except for this pilot episode, it's Don Adams.
Right.
But for almost every character had a different voice actor in the pilot. And then what you have is, or maybe two, if they're, you know, changed that to, for two of the different pilots. And then what you have is you have season one, which is in America, which is all recorded in the United States. And like we kind of found out with the Maurice LaMarche interview, which I didn't actually know beforehand, is then once you went to record in Canada, which is what Inspector Gadget did with his second season, you had basically quotas you had to fill of a certain number of Canadian voice actors, which is a reason why almost all Inspector Gadget was recast for the second season. So you have a lot of different things going on that provide three, four, five different voices for these main characters, and it makes it kind of interesting to me now in retrospect going back to watch it.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, moving on to Penny, I listened to several of the voice clips. I think I like the Cree Summer version the best.
And... See, Penny for me, I mean, I'm kind of combining voice acting with characters here. Penny, if you would have asked me about Inspector Gadget before I rewatched any of the episodes, before I listened to anything, you know, voice-wise, whatever, if you would have just asked me blindly which was my favorite character of the old Inspector Gadget, I would have told you Penny. Because for some reason my memory makes her, I don't know, better than she actually is. I just remember her as being my favorite character when I was a kid. I remember it very clearly. Mm-hmm. And then I go and I listen to all the different people who have done Penny, and just so you're aware, Mona Marshall did her in the pilot episode.
Yeah.
The first version, Cree Summer takes over for the first whole season, and then Holly Berger does her voice in the entire second season. And when I listen to all three of them, I'm like, was there another person? Because none of those, to me, sound like I have it in my head as how Penny sounded. And that's kind of a bizarre feeling when you have this person that's somewhat memorable and you remember a lot about them, and then you hear all the people that did it, and you're like, none of those are the one I remember in my head.
See, I was like that at first as, you know, as well, and I kept listening to Cree's version. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, that's Penny. Yeah. That's funny.
Well, for and I'm not saying this about the actual actress, voice actors, because they're all good voice actors. I can't stand Mona Marshall's in the pilot, and I'm glad they switched out of that one.
Yeah.
I actually don't like Cree Summers, though, nowadays. I probably liked her best back then, but for some reason I like Holly Berger's a little better now. But I think they're both good. I think they're both good takes on it. It's just not, for some reason it doesn't seem like the one I remember in my head, but I think they're both decent, and I think the voice acting overall in this cast and then the show is strong, even though there are some weird examples of stuff out there. And I think we should go back just for a second to Inspector Gadget, because I do want to mention the other guys. Because it's hilarious, if you go on YouTube or whatever video service you use, you can find it under a couple different names. Basically, the first two versions of the pilot are called Winter Olympics. And it's kind of, if you do a search for Inspector Gadget Winter Olympics, you'll probably find them both, or you can search for them by the actual names, which is, I'm forgetting the names of the two guys that did it right now.
Gary Owens and somebody else.
Gary Owens and another guy. but you can find them, and then if you do another search for, sometimes it's called Gadget in Winterland, that's the actual third version of the first pilot. And the third version, from what I hear, is almost impossible to find. The reason the first two versions are easy to find is because one of them was included on the American DVDs, and the other one was included on the Australian DVDs. So those two are out there because they're actually on DVD, whereas the third one, which is the one that they actually used on when they started the seasons, it didn't air as the number one episode. It aired much later in the season. But the third one's the one they used, but you can't find that one on DVD. And it's even said that on that one that they redubbed some of Inspector Gadget's lines using Frank Welker.
Mm-hmm.
which would bring another person that did Inspector Gadget's voice, which is just insane. But the reason they were doing that, because if you watch this pilot episode of Inspector Gadget, the first thing you'll see is you'll be like, what? Because Inspector Gadget has a mustache.
Yeah, we can talk about that more once we get to the actual show, because it the three versions, the differences, they are listed.
Okay, but so we'll get to why Frank Welker was used to dub over some of those, but I don't know. The first guy that did Inspector Gadget was Gary Owen did it in a very deep British accent, and it sounds really weird when you see Inspector Gadget and you hear that voice, because you all recognize Inspector Gadget as Don Adams' voice. Mm. So it sounds super funny when you hear it. You're like, is this some internet like spoof? Like, did someone, and in most of the YouTube videos, that's what almost all the comments are. This is a spoof. This is made up. Good editing, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, this is real.
Yeah.
And then the second guy basically tried to do a Don Adams impression. And then the studio figured, you know, why have someone trying to sound like someone when we can have the actual person? That's
right.
Why they went with Don Adams. So just wanted to get that out there so everyone's clear.
Yes. And virtually the only character in the entire series, from all the changes out of all the seasons and pilots and everything else, the only character that never got changed was Brain the Dog.
Of course, because it's a dog.
Well, yeah, but Brain was almost human-like. Come on, now.
I was just saying, who else does animal voices besides, of course, Frank Welker?
Well, yeah.
I say that Mad Cat was Frank Welker throughout the entire series, but who even though she...
Yeah, but Mad Cat didn't talk. Mad Cat didn't say, rah.
Yeah, that's true. I will say that I was watching... this is not what we're covering in this episode, but I was watching some episodes of... I don't know what year this came out, but... Gadget and the Gadgetinis.
Yeah.
And I just had to bring that up because in one of the episodes I watched, Penny actually gave Brain a device that he puts around his neck, which gives him the power to talk. And I thought that was awful.
Because
Brain starts talking, and it's like, I'm like, no, that's not what his voice should sound like. But you can probably find it out there. I have no idea what the episode is called, but
yeah,
it's kind of interesting. But Brain is kind of consistent throughout, so that's kind of a cool thing. And I will say that Brain nowadays, even though Penny was my favorite character growing up, Brain is my favorite character rewatching that.
Oh yeah,
I don't know if I
agree.
I don't even like dogs, but I love Scooby Doo. I love Brain. Brain is just, he's like a master of disguise. He's probably one of the smartest people in the entire show. he brings a lot of comedy to it. He brings so much to that show. He's not your typical side character. He's not an Orko from He-Man. He's not a Snarf from Thundercats. He's a legitimate player in this show, and he brings a whole lot more than just comedy to the show.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of comedy to the show, we have Chief Quimby, who was actually voiced by Dan Hennessy, then Maurice LaMarche. I went back over to BBTA, and I listened to the Hennessy one, and honestly, I said in the Maurice LaMarche interview that I remember the other guy. Now going back to it, I have to retract that statement. I actually remember Maurice's voice as Quimby better.
Yep, and I agree with that 100%. That's the voice. And I was curious on that one because I saw the two people, and I'm like, I wonder which one is the one I remember. And the thing about Chief Quimby is the three, and actually John Stevenson, who is super famous voice actor, did him in the pilot episode, the first version. Mm-hmm. But these three people did completely different takes on this character,
mm-hmm.
which isn't surprising because when you have a chief character, you can kind of get a lot of different takes on it. John Stevenson has throughout all the classic cartoons, Hanna-Barbera, and stuff like that, he's almost always the chief or the general or some type of authority position person. So you will very much recognize his voice. The one he uses for Chief Quimby is no different than the one he uses for some of these other characters. But I'm with you. I remember the Maurice LaMarche character voice a lot better than I remember the Dan Hennessy one.
Yes, very much so. And honestly, the only two villains we're going to talk about is the only two that really matter, Dr. Claw, and Mad Cat. Because I'm looking down the list here, I don't remember any of these damn villains.
And most of them never had names or anything. They're just his henchmen.
Oh, no, they all have names. In Season 1, they all have... Actually, Season 1 and Season 2, they all have names.
Oh, I'm talking about Dr. Claw's actual henchmen. Maybe not the... You might have a list of other villains, but there was actual henchmen that Dr. Claw used.
Okay.
They were never named in the series, but they were named by the production staff or the people behind the scenes in order to keep them straight. And you can go on, like, IMDb and see what all their names are. They're all named after people, but... But yeah, Dr. Claw is basically the only villain that matters, in my opinion.
So Dr. Claw, who is the main antagonist of the series and movies, he is the leader of the evil organization known as MAD. He speaks in a deep, menacing, ominous-sounding voice, and his face, the majority of his body, are never shown throughout the series. Only his arms and gloved hands are visible. Thank God both of his hands were gloved. Ding! He is usually at a computer terminal where he monitors his various schemes, often in a creepy old castle. Even though he is aware of Gadget's stupidity, he believes the Inspector to be the greatest nemesis, never fully realizing that it is actually Penny and Brain who foil his plots in each episode. Although he or his mad agents have captured Penny and sometimes Brain a number of times. He is voiced by Frank Welker, and in a few episodes in the first season by Don Franks. Or Frax, or Frank... it's F-R-A-N-C-K-S, which makes no sense. I don't care that this other guy was voicing him, partly in Season 1. Frank Welker is Dr. Claw.
Oh, of course.
End of story.
This guy voiced him, Don Franks voiced him in four episodes of the show when Welker was obviously too busy. Imagine that. to record. And... I don't know. The first time, I know he was trying to do his best Welker imitation, I guess, or impersonation, but it makes those four episodes really hard to watch because it is no contest here. You want to hear Frank Welker as Dr. Claw. And for those of you that have never heard this, first of all, shame on you and go buy the DVDs or watch them somewhere. But Dr. Claw is very similar, but not the same. I don't care how many people tell me it's the same. It's not the same as Soundwave.
All right. Hold on.
Hold on.
In Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, it was announced that Soundwave was going to be in the movie, and then it was announced that Frank Welker was going to do the voice. And everybody from Timbuktu to Timbuktu3... speculated whether or not they were going to use a vocoder for Soundwave. Soundwave does indeed sound a little bit like Dr. Claw. Not as much. The only reason why I kind of forgive it is because of the simple fact that, obviously, Mr. Welker is older now. When he was doing Dr. Claw, that was almost 30 years ago. 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
Something to that effect. But I can see why people would draw that conclusion, that it is just the Dr. Claw voice as Soundwave, and a lot of people got pissed about it. Honestly, for that movie, I think it works.
I don't even think it sounds exactly like it in the movie.
Well,
and
No. What I'm saying is when I say I think it works for the Soundwave movie character as far as that voice, whether it's the old Dr. Claw or not. It's slightly similar to it. It's not the exact thing, but it is slightly similar.
And I would say, too, and for those of you that want to maybe give Welker grief because you're saying he did his Soundwave in Transformers, the cartoon, the same as he did Dr. Claw and Inspector Gadget, I don't think you can say that because, number one, he knew that there were vocal effects being added to Soundwave.
Yeah.
So in a sense, he knew that was going to be a different sounding voice. I would actually argue that Dr. Claw sounds more like Welker's Super Friends character, or whatever you want to call it.
Darkseid.
I think Darkseid and Dr. Claw actually sound more similar than Soundwave and Dr. Claw. But, it's all similar types of voice. Frank Welker does a good, menacing, deep voice, but... Yeah. He also does other voices, so this is just one of his iconic voices.
Yes, and then of course his feline friend Mad Cat Is Dr. Claus' fat pet cat, a man cat is always at Dr. Claus' side, usually curled up next to Claus' control panel. Man cat serves as a foil for Dr. Claus, often being petted when Dr. Claus is happy, to the point of getting beaten up when Dr. Claus gets angry. Mad cat talks, quote unquote, in cat sounds. Mad cat has an evil hissing laugh. He is voiced by Frank Welker.
Imagine that.
Yes. Yeah. I wish eventually somehow the whole series, both seasons plus the pilot episodes, could be on DVD. I know that there is one DVD set out for it. But I'm actually going to hold off on trying to get it because I want to see. I don't want to be one of those. Oh, I got to have that, and then a year later, oh, here's the complete series. You bastards.
So I'm doing that with He-Man and Thundercats, too.
Well, see, I already have He-Man and Thundercats, so, you know, I've had those for a couple of years now, so I'm okay with...
I have the first volume of each one, but I'm not buying any more because I want to wait for the whole thing.
Yeah. As far as the other villains, who cares? Mad Cat and Dr. Claus were the only two villains that really mattered. Just really quick before we move on, just listing off some of the voice actors. Obviously, Don Adams, Frank Welker, Cree Summer, Dan Hennessy, who is in the pilot there. Maurice LaMarche is the chief. Who else is in this?
I will mention another character we haven't mentioned yet, just even though I hate the character.
Corporal Caveman.
Yeah, Corporal Caveman. I can't stand him. I don't know if I could stand him as a kid or not, but the few episodes I've watched today, or not today, but leading up to this record, that had Corporal Caveman in it, I really didn't care for him that much at all, but he did have a pretty famous voice actor, so.
Yeah, well, Townsend Coleman, which actually, it's funny, I forgot all about this. I had listened to the Moonbase 2 podcast, which is a UK-based Transformers podcast with David Wallace and I think it's Cobra Commander TFW. I don't know. It's Kal-El Prime and Cobra Commander TFW. I don't know, whatever. They interviewed Mr. Coleman, and, you know, he was telling a story of, you know, being in a voice session for Gadget, you know, and he's like, oh, I got Don Adams on my left, and I got Maurice LaMarche on my right, and here's me, and I'm just like,
oh, wow.
You know, or something similar to that reaction. But, yeah, you know, honestly, I'm not recognizing a lot of these other people.
Do you remember the character, Corporal Caveman, at all?
No.
Okay, he was basically, he had a cape, and he looked like, I don't know how I could come, like a retarded 19-year-old or a teenager, early 20-year-old, I don't know what age he was supposed to be, maybe late teenager, but just a retarded, annoying character, and I apologize for using the word retarded on here, but that's the best way I can describe him. And
yeah, I saw the screen cap that was in the article here of the model, and yeah, no.
And basically, he sticks around Inspector Gadget most of the time, and the two of them together is just seems stupid to me because you already have Inspector Gadget, who is basically a bumbling fool.
Yeah.
Who isn't very smart. I mean, he's super optimistic, which is really great, and that's one reason why a lot of people like Inspector Gadget, because he's always looking at the better side of things, and, you know, everything is always golden. But you already have a kind of a bumbling idiot, and then you add an annoying kind of retarded idiot next to him, and I didn't care for it. I just liked it better when it was Gadget playing off of Penny and Brain.
Yeah. I agree with you. So, moving into the behind-the-scenes segment here, the Inspector Gadget's gadgets were the most unusual aspect of the show, although they are central to his character. They rarely actually do him any good. Just some of the most common ones were the binoculars, the gadget brella, the gadget coach, the gadget copter, the gadget cuffs, go-go gadget hands, legs, arms, neck, top secret gadget phone, gadget skates, and gadget springs. He had a whole bunch of other ones that He had a gadget respirator. What the hell?
I don't know if he has a listener now, so I apologize if I steal your thunder, but basically in total, it's reported that he had 13,000 built-in devices.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the things I remember. That's saying the word go-go gadget.
Oh, yeah.
It's just part of, and at least in my world, it's just like part of everyday vocabulary. Like if you're in a traffic jam or something, you know, I've said to people before, oh, we need our go-go gadget wheels or whatever, or, you know, if I'm sitting somewhere and someone asks me for something that's out of my reach, you know, I'll be like, oh, go-go gadget arm or something like that. I mean, that's just something that's common because if you grew up in the 80s, you will get that reference. So.
Oh, yeah, that is the most referenced thing about this show, is the go-go gadget line. The Gadget Mobile. I love this. This is so awesome. Similar to his body, Gadget's car, the Gadget Mobile is also fully loaded with seemingly limitless arsenal of gadgets and has all of the cliched features of any fictional crime-fighting vehicle, such as the Batmobile or the Mach 5 or James Bond's car or Kit from Knight Rider, for instance, including a smokescreen, a siren, a laughing gas, referred to as hilarious gas, the ability to drop trail of tacks to blow out pursuing vehicles' tires, ejector seat, glue rockets, and a claw on the front referred to as the Gadget Claw. That's kind of weird. What the hell? The Gadget Mobile seems to resemble a Mark II Supra, a Mitsubishi Starion similar style car with vents behind the window, or a Brooklyn SV1. A Supra makes a cameo in the Inspector Gadget film, even though in the film the Gadget Mobile was changed to a Lincoln Continental. What the hell? Do we want to talk about Penny and Brain's gadgets? She just has a computer book, which I guess was cool back then, but...
She was ahead of her time, actually. She had the wristwatch computer book thing. Yep. and everything. And, you know, nowadays everybody carries one around, you know, called your cell phone or your iPod or your whatever you want to call it. But she was definitely ahead of her time with that. I will say that since we're talking about some of the stuff that's involved, what brought it to my attention was when you said this car is basically a mixture of every cliched thing that had ever been used in a superhero thing. And this is kind of behind the scenes. But Andy Hayward, which is basically the president of Beak Enterprises at this time, this is where Tooncast comes full circle, because Andy Hayward was someone who we, in passing, have mentioned multiple times in the show, especially when we were doing our Hanna-Barbera spotlight, because Andy Hayward basically was a staffer at Hanna-Barbera. And what he did basically for Inspector Gadget is he wanted to combine all the elements that had appealed to him from his work at Hanna-Barbera, so all those classic cartoons, his own toys as a child, the Three Stooges, and then the Scooby-Doo kind of bumbling heroics thing. He was trying to combine all that, so that's where you get some of these, you know, that's why you have 13,000 contraptions in Inspector Gadget. That's why you have this Gadgetmobile that has all these different things from other shows that you might be able to pick up on. Because he was basically just trying to combine all of this stuff into something that he could, you know, use at Beak as a successful show.
Yeah. The last thing we're going to talk about before we move on to the actual show is, of course, the three versions of the pilot, as you mentioned earlier. In version one, we have the first had Gary Owens voicing Inspector Gadget in a deep, British-sounding way, which the producers felt didn't quite nail the character. The version with Gary Owens can be found on the Australian Inspector Gadget, the original series box set. One DVD set also has the intro, which differs somewhat from the second version. In version 2, for the second version, Jesse White voiced Gadget, this time in a style sounding much closer to the voice of Maxwell Smart, played by Don Adams of Get Smart. One of the series' inspirational sources, the producers still weren't completely satisfied with the voice, although eventually decided to hire Don Adams himself rather than sound alike. Adams began voicing the character from number 2, Monster Lake. The version of the pilot episode became one that was used to sell the rest of the show, and as the first one, it had somewhat unique intro with several scenes taken directly from the episode rather than being all original, such as both the Gary Owens version intro and the regular one. This version was first publicly seen when Deke repackaged the series in the early 1990s, and it carries the title Winter Olympics. Originally, none of the episodes had their titles displayed on screen. It can be found in the American DVD releases, Inspector Gadget, The Gadget Files, and Inspector Gadget, The Original Series. Version 3. When the entire series eventually made it out onto the air in 1983, a lot of changes had been made. The changes were so many, in fact, that the pilot episode was no longer coherent with the rest, the biggest and most obvious difference being the inspector's mustache. This led to a third sound version of the pilot episode being made, with only one scene differing from the second version. In the first scene, inside their cabin in Winterland, Penny and Gadget have a redubbed dialogue explaining that Inspector Gadget's mustache is only a disguise for the holiday. It has been rumored that Frank Welker played both Penny and Gadget in this small redub. Okay, what?
I want to see that. If anyone can find that somewhere out there in on a VHS recording or a... I don't care how you can find it. If you can find it, please, please, please let us know. I want to hear that.
Wait. He... In the what he played Penny and Gadget? How the hell?
Which would be awesome since he had already played every other character on the show. He could do that. I want to see him pull that off. But what's interesting is on the clip that behindthevoiceactors.com, the one I have set up for Jesse White. I was listening to it because obviously Jesse White's doing the voice in both of these versions. The one that is completely. The one that's on the American DVD and this one that's rumored to have Frank Welker dubbed over it. And I was trying to listen to it to see if I could find that scene where he was at, but it's supposedly really hard to find. But I swear that even in the one that's there for Jesse White, there is about three or four words, like one phrase that he says that sounds exactly like Frank Welker.
Mm.
It's only Inspector Gadget. It's not Penny. And it's something about when he says... something about I'm always, or I'm off duty. I'm completely and utterly off duty. It's somewhere around there. I'm like, that sounds like Frank Welker, but I know it's not that version because as you have on the script there, it says that Welker was used to explain away the mustache, and the line that I think sounds like Welker does not explain away the mustache.
Yes. Really quick, going to talk about the decline of the show because there's so many changes from season one to season two. The first season episodes were repeated during the 1984 and 1985 season, with 21 new episodes premiering during the second and last season of Inspector Gadget. From September 1985 to February 1986, making an 86 in all, several significant changes were made to the established formula in the cheaper episodes in the second season. In the second season, a few episodes were redivided into threes, i.e. three episodes in a row sharing the same general theme, and often same villains. Boo. Evil henchmen have recurring roles, appearing as many as three episodes in a row, and more often than not even being arrested after their final appearance. Boo. The crime would increasingly be stupefied down to mad just trying to get rid of Gadget. Okay, whatever. The Gadget team moved into a high-tech house filled with many gadgets where few of the episodes were actually located. Oh, Christ. Yeah, anyway, there's a ton of these. You can go to Wikipedia and look up Inspector Gadget, and you'll find these in the article for that.
I will say, though, that I must have watched the second season more, though, because I remember Holly Berger as Penny. I remember Maurice LaMarche as Chief Quimby, so I must have watched more of the second season than... the first, even though the first seems like it would have been better.
Yeah, I don't know.
We did also miss one thing on the pilot that was different than the regular show, which is the pilot has Inspector Gadget for the first time ever claimed to be off duty because it's one of his recurring quotes in the regular show to say he's always on duty. Huh. And also you have some examples in the first pilot episode where Inspector Gadget is actually a competent, like, smart individual. There's a scene, for example, where there's one of Mad agents throws some oil on the snow hill or whatever, and Inspector Gadget like uses his device to, you know, he somehow knows it's going to be there, and he avoids it, and he does a couple other competent things, which usually in the show would never happen.
Yeah. Okay, although these differences lessened parts of the repetition, many of the stories were far weaker and thinner in content and structure than those of the first season, and the animation visibly cheaper. The full reason for the show's cancellation is still unknown. I don't even really want to list off any of these people that I got as far as the writers and directors, because the only one I really recognize is, as we said before, Andy Hayward. So, going into the actual show, Gadget works as an inspector for the Metro City Police Department. His missions often take him to different exotic locales, generally without giving any explanation as to how a crime on the other side of the earth would be of any interest to or even within the jurisdiction of a city police department like the Metro City Police, which included one episode solving a rash of disappearances in the Bermuda Triangle, which turned out to be another mad plot. Although there are rare exceptions, most every episode of the first season follows a standard plot with little variation. Many of these elements were tinkered with in season 2. Number 1, Gadget, Penny, and Brain are engaged in a typical family activity that is interrupted by Police Chief Quimby calling on the top-secret Gadget phone. He then appears in an outlandish disguise, anything from gas barrel to a gypsy fortune teller, a turtle shell, to even a gargoyle on Gadget's house. Number 2, Gadget gives... Quimby gives Gadget a mission on the self-destructing sheet of paper. As Gadget reads the message, his eyes dart back and forth, while sound of a typewriter, fax machine, or camera's shutter in servo mode is heard in the background. Often Penny and Brain are near Gadget and listen to what he reads. A few times, Brain listens by himself. Very rarely, Penny listens by herself. Occasionally, neither one of them listens to what Gadget reads. The last line of the message always reads, "This message will self-destruct." A spoof of the exploding taped messages from Mission Impossible. I'm not gonna really read all this crap. Yeah, there's a bunch of changes. That's all I gotta say. In season 2, there's a ton of changes. Holy crap, there's 12 listed here. Wow, okay.
I will say, though, because it's something we didn't say, that the whole message of self-destruct is obviously a classic thing that most people that watch Inspector Gadget will remember.
Yeah.
The funnier thing to me is not that the message always self-destructed and that it was always Chief Quimby who blew up. The funniest part of that whole bit that they use over and over to me is the fact that the chief would go out of his way to be in a disguise and be like a foot away from Gadget in order to relay him a message on paper that he could have easily just told him, and I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, why did he ever just tell him the message? He has to deliver him the note and then get blown up.
Well, you know what? You know what's funny is, since we are on the actual show, it's funny that you bring that up and it's funny that they say he works for the Metro Police. I don't think so. I think the chief and Matt, this whole show seems CIA to me. CIA versus, I mean, you could almost substitute the CIA for Gadget and the chief, and Russia for Dr. Claw and Mad, almost.
Right. But I just love the disguises he shows up in. It's awesome.
Oh yeah. Yes, poor Chief Quimby. moving into the music segment again. Wow, Shuki Levy and Ham Saban did the music for this show. The theme music for the show was composed by Shuki Levy. Levy has had a long-running partnership with his friend Haim Saban, with Levy composing the music and Saban running the business. Their records company, Saban Records, now Saban Music Group, has provided music for many Deke cartoons and children's shows in the 80s and 90s and is still running today. 1984's The Show, the rap artist Dougie Fresh is used in a refrain several stanzas of the theme. In this turn, it was re-released during the dance club scene for 1991 movie New Jack City. Most of the background music cues are some sort of variation of the Gadget melody. Even at festivals or dances in the cartoon, the Gadget theme is usually played. There is a soundtrack LP to accompany the series named Inspector, like, you know, it's European. The Inspector Gadget Bandi Originali, was released in France in 1983 by Saban Records. The LP is extremely rare. The soundtrack features the following tracks: Inspector Gadget with French vocals, Penny's theme with French vocals, the Brain the Dog the Song with French vocals, Gadget on Mars, Ghost, Mad Art in a Museum, Gadget in Japan, Chocolate Factory, Rodeo. There's basically 22 tracks on it.
I just want to say, I do have to say that, you know, even with all this other music, for it's like a Gadget, the only music that's important is the theme song.
Oh, yeah.
The theme song, it's not, I wouldn't say it's not in any of my top 10 lists, but it is one of the most iconic 80s theme songs out there, and everybody knows the Inspector Gadget theme song, or should know it.
Yes. Oh, boy. There is a parody of it. In 2006, for the first time in 22 years, Cree Summer and Frank Welker reprised their Inspector Gadget roles for the animated sketch show Robot Chicken in a segment of the episode Adoptions and Option. The parody was based on the 1983 original series with Dr. Claw and Brain voiced by Frank Welker and Penny voiced by Cree Summer. Gadget himself was voiced by Joe Hanna. Don Adams died in 2005. Oh, sad. With a brief appearance of Chief Quimby voiced by Seth Green. They couldn't get Maurice for that? Come on.
I'm sure they could have.
Yeah, anyway. Oh, Kevin will love this. In January 2009, IGN named Inspector Gadget as the 54th best in the top 100 best animated TV shows.
Should be higher.
Yes. I mean, I agree.
This is my justification for that. I'm not just saying that because I'm an 80s child. I'm not just saying that because this is a show I grew up on and watched. This is another one of our historically significant shows. Just like we had with, like when we talked about a couple of the Hanna-Barbera shows, we had Jabberjaw, which is a show that made Frank Welker. We had Huckleberry Hound, which is basically the show that launched Hanna-Barbera,
mm-hmm.
for all intents and purposes. There's no arguing this fact. There's no other show that you can say this about. This is the show that made Beak Enterprises.
Yeah, no doubt.
This is what made Beak at the time in competition with Hanna-Barbera and Filmation. I mean, yep. Those were the three at this. Well, I mean, obviously Warner Brothers is doing its own thing, but as far as like straight-up cartoon producers, it was Hanna-Barbera and Filmation until Inspector Gadget came out, and then Beak was a player, and to me, that means that this is one of the top 50, if not top, I don't know, 30 cartoons of all time. I mean, it made one of the most successful production companies a player in the game.
Oh, yes. There are DVD releases. The only one that really matters is Inspector Gadget, the original series, 4-disc DVD set collecting the first 22 episodes released in North America on April 25th, 2006 by Shout Factory. There are errors in the box concerning which episodes are on each disc. The last episode listed on each disc is actually the first episode on the next disc. 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment would later acquire the rights to the cartoon. And the special features on that set are a retrospective look at Inspector Gadget with Andy Hayward, the Deke Chairman, and Mike Malami, the Deke Chief Creative Officer, original art gallery, and original sketch of Inspector Gadget done by a recent contest winner as seen on Boomerang. And there are other versions, other DVDs out there. Why the hell does Australia always get the good shit? Inspector Gadget, the 25th Anniversary Collection, 9-disc box set released in Australia by Magna Pacific on November 5th, 2008. This release contains the first 64 episodes from the original series, Season 1. What the hell? Bastard.
Yeah, and it has the Gary Owens pilot, so...
Oh, God. Okay, so last thing we're going to talk about before we go to a quick break here is the live-action movie. A live-action movie version starring Matthew Broderick as Inspector Gadget and Rupert Everett as Dr. Claw was released in 1999 by Walt Disney Pictures. I actually saw this in theaters.
I'm sorry.
All right, come on now.
I don't know.
Come on now. It's not as bad as some of the other live-action adaptations of stuff. And I think...
I'm sure it's better than Underdog.
Oh, yes. Very much so.
I still refuse to watch it. It might be good. It might be good.
Okay. I know that. Okay. There's a big difference between 1986 and 1999, but basically take Ferris Bueller, put him in a trench coat with a hat, and give him gadgets.
The reason I won't watch it, though, is because I will not be subjected to anybody else as Dr. Claw than Frank Welker.
I agree, and honestly, it's been so long since I've seen it that I don't really remember how Rupert Everett's version was, but one of the reasons why I like it was because they actually got someone fairly decent to represent Gadget, which was Matthew Broderick.
No, I have no problem with that. I think that's a good choice. My problem is, and I haven't seen it, so I don't know, but I'm guessing that they show Dr. Claw's face.
I honestly couldn't tell you. I don't remember.
If they do, I don't know why you'd get Rupert Everett if you're not going to show his face, but that's my problem is if, I don't know, I just can't stomach it, so I can't watch it. I don't want to ruin anything that I
like. You know, I agree with you, but like I said, I would have to see it again to remember, because I don't remember. So we are going to go to a little thing where our the other Kevin had called us back. You had posted, Kevin, that's actually the host here, had given the call out to the fans what were their favorite Hanna-Barbera cartoons, and Kevin, the mystery caller, called in and left a message on that as far as what his favorite one was. So you're going to hear that next, and a few other things, and we will come back with the closing. We'll be right back after this.
Tooncast will be back after these messages.
Hello, Tooncast. This is Kevin, a.k.a. Mystery Caller. Calling in response to your Captain Caveman episode where you asked what our favorite Hanna-Barbera cartoon is. And mine, I got to say, is the Jetsons, simply because I saw the most of it. I mean, some of the classics like Yogi, Huckleberry Hound, Quick Draw McGraw, was pretty much mostly for my older siblings' generation. By the time I was coming up, a lot of their stuff had already been taken off the air, so I just saw so much more of the Jetsons, and it ended up being my favorite. And also, you know, the theme song is what really made it so memorable to me, because, I don't know, it's just one of those things that kind of sticks with you, and I love the whole futuristic thing that they have going with the cartoon, and George Jetson being my favorite character. Now, on another note, and Barbera worked on Dexter's Lab, so that's pretty interesting. Just thought I'd throw that in there. Great show. Have a good day.
When I'm not ridding Third Earth of Mumra's evil, I'm enjoying Tooncast with the other Thundercats.
This is Dr. Wily, and I will destroy Mega Man while listening to Tooncast.
Mortimer Mouse here, and when I'm not setting Mickey up, I like listening to Tooncast.
Now back to Tooncast.
So, 50 episodes, we're halfway done with this show. Yay. when I set out doing this, we've had several schedule changes as far as what the actual shows will be covering. We've had several host changes. For the most part, I think you've been back since episode 25, maybe? I think.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. We've had several changes and stuff like that. It always amazes me of getting to an important number like 25, 50, 75. But this show is halfway done, so we've only got, so much longer, so much more to go here. Final thoughts.
I just want to say, don't think that we don't have some good stuff still to cover. We got a lot.
Oh, no, we got plenty of good stuff to cover. No. I'm not saying, I'm not saying that we don't.
That haven't heard your favorite cartoon. Trust me, if it was a notable cartoon in the time period that we were talking about, you're going to hear it.
Yeah, for the most part. I don't know if this person still listens to the show, but there was a person on our forums on PredaconEmpire.com/Nexus called, I think it was Justice Maximus or whatever, or something like that. When I originally, I've actually stopped posting show schedules on forums anymore because, you know, I don't want the backlash of, oh, my favorite show's not on there. Oh, it's, why is it taking so long? Well, Justice Maximus, unfortunately, because Kevin needed more time, Cops is no longer episode 59. It is now somewhere in the episode 70 range.
I do want to say, though, the reason is because now the second volume on DVD just came out, and I just wanted to have time to watch.
No, I'm not saying anything against you. He posted a while ago about why is Cops a year away. Well, it's still going to be a little bit longer. Do you have anything else you'd like to... Oh, yeah, final thoughts on Gadget.
Yeah, my final thoughts on Gadget is this. Number one, it's one of the best shows in the 80s. It's still watchable. When I was watching it recently, I had no problem watching it and still enjoying it, which a lot of the shows are dated from that period, and I don't think are watchable. This one, at least the episodes I saw, were still entertaining and were not dated. So you can watch them. I suggest, you know, you don't necessarily, it's not one that I would say you'd have to have on DVD, but you should, if you're a fan of cartoons and if you've never been exposed to Inspector Gadget or if you're a fan from the 80s, you should look it up and watch a few episodes wherever you can find them, like on YouTube or this or that. And if you're a big fan, I have two suggestions. Number one, find the pilot with Gary Owens because it'll blow you away. It's so ridiculous. And number two, shameless plug, go to BehindTheVoiceActors.com and let us know which your favorite version of each character is. That's my final thought. Good show.
Yes. Yes. So, thank you for joining us here on TuneCast. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. Join the forum, spreadiconempire.com/nexus. Leave the show feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter. The show name there is GCR and TuneCast. Mine is TFG on Mike. What is your Twitter?
Boss K Dog.
Become a fan on Facebook. Search GeekCast Radio Network. You can also search Behind the Voice Actors and become a fan of theirs.
Thank you.
The hell's a fan? I have no idea where the hell the D came from. Anyway, call the voicemail line. Tell us the show you're leaving the message for and your name. 502-526-5821. We hope you enjoyed this episode of TuneCast and wish you'll join us next time when we will be reminiscing on... Oh, Christ. The Care Bears. Boy. For now, I am TFG on mic with...
Professor Boss K-Dog, who from now on, since we're at episode 50, I would like to say, from now on you'll hear me referred to as Optimus Solo.
Okay. Saying thank you for listening. Until next time.
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight. I see a new episode of TuneCast coming this week. Oh,